And a good Wednesday morning to you, and welcome into Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody's having a good hump day so far. Yeah, it's Wednesday. It's beautiful outside. I mean, last night was, I mean, can we sign up for that, like, all the time? Afternoon and evening hours in, what is this? It's not mid-June, it's not late June, kind of in between. Mid and late June. Can we sign up for that?
It's late June.
Is it late June?
It's late June.
Yeah, I'd say it's you're right. We're there's a week left. Okay, it's late June. Can we get that? I mean, it was like 70 degrees. We had baseball practice, and it was like, are you kidding me? Is this the fall league? Are we playing in the fall? What's going on? It was awesome.
Great day for a workout.
I figured you'd be on the porch.
Well, that was afterwards.
Ah.
There's another thing. Yeah, and I got to finish watching Montreal win. I got to see the crazy finish to the Suns game on the porch. Yeah, and it was fantastic. I mean, didn't even have the fan on. It was just like, wow, this is unbelievable. So, yes, if we could have some more of that, please, although I think that was kind of it for that cold front. I think it's going back up today. I think it may be 80 today. I think we go up probably 10 degrees.
Which is
not
awful.
Humidity is supposed to be low, though.
Yeah.
Like so, and then tomorrow it gets back to sort of the what you expect for late June.
Yeah. Darren McFarland, Willie Donick, Chase McCabe with you. Elijah Campbell, man in the board at the Wholesale Link Game Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com. Unfortunately, a second team has been shown the door in Omaha, and it was, unfortunately, the Vols. So an SEC team going down. Tennessee season comes to a close in that afternoon game yesterday against Texas after – you know, look, you always have opportunities, right? And coaches are famous for this, and players too. And it's so true. It's a long game. It's a nine-inning game, and there's a lot of opportunities. But I also say that's a little bit of bunk. It really is, because sometimes you only get one opportunity in a game. And so I don't buy all that. We had, you know, it's a long game. There's other chances to win the game. No, well, maybe your one chance was that chance that you didn't capitalize on. And it happened during our show yesterday, and I just kind of felt the whole time like,
you
man, because I said it, and, you know, I've had those feelings, you know, my coaches know. I mean, we've had times where certain situations where I've looked at them and I was like, boy, that's probably going to come back to bite us. Like, that was our opportunity to really, you know, pounce on this team and really send a message and dictate the entire rest of the game. That's probably going to come back to haunt us. You know, like, well, the base is loaded right out of the gates, nobody out, and we don't score, you know, or one run, you know, and it's like, wow, we really missed a golden opportunity. They had bases loaded, nobody out early in the game, and you've got an opportunity really just to, I mean, they feed off their emotions, right? It's no secret to that. Yeah. They feed off Tony Vitello. Sure. They feed off their assistant coaches, one who got thrown out of the game. I mean, they're an emotional team. And so you have bases loaded, nobody out, and you play nothing. I don't care. You can say all that, you know, we had all the rest of the game to take. You could say all that, but maybe what if that was your opportunity? What if that changed the whole complexion of the game and the result of it is you're going home? And so I just kind of had that feeling. And, yes, Chase, I did say it out loud. But, boy, that's going to probably come back to bite you, and it did.
I think that game was an extremely compelling game, the first five or six innings. A lot happened there, which I think we'll get into.
A lot to digest.
You know, I'm going to be pretty consistent with this, and I don't know if everybody agrees with me or, you know, philosophically, but, you know, I'm just going to give the answer of that's baseball, right? Just like when I say it's hockey. Bases loaded, no out. You can't fault the Tennessee hitter for the at-bat. He hits the ball right on the button. A hard shot, one hop. The guy makes a really nice play. He's playing in. You know, he snares it on a hop. He throws it home. The catcher makes an even better play because it's a bad throw.
Wasn't a great throw, yeah.
He scoops it up, which is really hard to do as a catcher. Right?
And complete the play.
Yeah, he keeps his foot on the base and gets the double play.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know that Tennessee did anything wrong there. It's like if he'd have come out and not been able to get a bunt down or, you know, just had a bad at bat, took some strikes right down the middle, then okay. But I think you can do things right in baseball and sometimes in other sports, definitely hockey, right? You make the right play, it just doesn't go your way. There's a little bit of luck involved. And like you said, Darren, they did have other chances there. I thought that their opportunity was the Texas starting pitcher didn't really have his best stuff, and they sort of let him escape without really getting to him.
Well, that's part of the escape, that right there, what we're talking
about. Oh, it was a big escape.
Part of the escape. They had him on the ropes early. And look, I am not assessing blame.
Yeah.
Make no mistake about it. When I say I've said that about our little travel ball team, I'm not assessing blame. Yeah, there's no doubt that's part of baseball. I'm not saying we did something wrong or they did something wrong. I'm saying in those moments, sometimes, especially early on in a game, and especially in this case, a team that feeds off emotion, especially off a starting pitcher, as you just well stated, didn't have his best stuff. Boy, you had a real golden opportunity to really, like I said, change the whole complexion of the game, because that's how they've done it all season, right? They hit a gapper right there. They plate two or three. All of a sudden, they've opened up a can, and then you can't get it back if you're Texas on that Tennessee team, because they ride that emotional wave, and boy, they can ride it to the finish line as they did, what, 50 times this year. And that's all I'm saying. Yeah, I'm not saying they did anything wrong. I'm not saying that, man, what was that? You know, what was that guy thinking? The lefty who hit it to third. What was he thinking? No, I'm not saying that at all. I'm just saying, man, you squandered a golden opportunity to really maybe put Texas, put them away early on, and unfortunately you couldn't do it.
I think what stood out to me in the, you know, the couple games that they played there is, you're not going to have – like, Vandy has the experience. Even though it's different players, that coaching staff, Tim Corbin, it just you can tell when they show up in Omaha – they've been there before. You've seen other teams that it's kind of the same way. It felt like they couldn't shake off, you know, everything that goes with going to the College World Series for the first time since 2005. And really the first time for this group, this program, this coaching staff. So I felt like that.
By the way, that's a real thing.
Of course it is.
Vandy's first time in the regional? Wasn't that the Michigan game? Wasn't that their first time? Or was it not?
It was the first time they ever hosted a regional.
Yeah. So
they won a regional a couple years before that.
There was real pressure, right? They had never been in that spot.
Well, they were the number one overall seed.
Yeah.
They had a target on their back.
And that's what I'm getting at.
They did not play their best.
To Chase's point, you know, they didn't handle it exactly the way they wanted to handle it, the way they had handled it all season long. And I think maybe, to your point, Tennessee didn't exactly handle their business because it was their first time being there.
Right.
By the way, that's a big stage you're on.
It's huge. How many times did we talk about going into the AFC championship game with the Bills that, you know, they're going up against a team that has been there three straight years in Kansas City? They've never been there before. Could they handle that pressure? And they didn't. I mean, it's a true thing in any sport that, you know, you hear the phrase, act like you've been there before. Well, you know what? I mean, if you haven't, you don't know how to act. You don't know how to deal with that pressure. And I'm not using that as an excuse by any means, but it's a real thing.
Yeah, it's
a
challenge.
And I think it affected
them. Some
teams
do it, some teams don't. But it is absolutely a big challenge.
It just never felt like you saw Tennessee at the full Tennessee potential in Omaha. Whether it was adapting to the field or dealing with the pressure, whatever. I think it was all encompassing. It just felt like they never quite got to where they needed to get to be able to survive. And to that point, I don't know if you've really seen that with Vandy yet. I mean, yeah, it was a 1-0 game, different. But I think Vandy's got another level. Now, I feel more confident about them going to that because of what I just said. They've been there before. They've experienced this. They're the defending national champions. I feel like they will flip that switch tonight. But it just never happened for Tennessee.
It's been so much fun to watch these games. The Mississippi State game was a great game.
Oh, my gosh.
Last night, no hitter for seven innings for Virginia. Total command of the game, and Mississippi State comes back and wins to go 2-0. They are in great position right now. So, I mean, it is. I've been glued to it, right? I missed about the first half of a tremendous NBA playoff game and a great NHL playoff game last night because I just couldn't take my eyes off.
You don't
of
need
it.
To watch the first half of an NBA.
Okay, I'm not one of those guys. You're that guy. I'm not that guy. I enjoyed watching the NBA. It was a great finish. I'm sure we'll get to, but I couldn't watch them all. But I chose to watch the College World Series. You know, a guy had a no hitter who would sort of come out of nowhere, and you have this huge throng of Mississippi State fans who are just taking over Omaha there, and they make a great comeback. It's been awesome. And, you know, Chase, I think about that a lot, what you're talking about, you know, experience versus non-experience. I think it helps. It just doesn't mean that you're always going to play your best. Baseball is such a tough thing. I just, like, look at Vanderbilt tonight. They've got a big, big challenge. I don't know much about Stanford. Stanford, I would think, has got a little bit of
Well, how
Nothing
do you know it's
lose?
A big challenge if you don't know much about them?
I just think Vanderbilt's in a spot here, and this is really.
You know why? Because you're being Coach Willie. That's what you're doing. Well, you blow the whistle.
Am I ever not?
Yeah. Well, no. You're.
Am
really
I ever
being,
not?
It's like, guys.
On occasion, but it's rare.
Don't talk anything good about Vanderbilt today. Talk about the opponent. You want us to go Lou Holtz all day. This Stanford right. team is just the Cardinal. It's unbelievable. It's some team is unstoppable. Yeah. It's just Stanford.
Well, we know they're there.
You can't be beat.
That's what. Why you do you think, always but, pick on Willie? Why you got to be so
why
negative?
Is it he's so negative.
Lou Holtz. This is what you want us to be yeah. today for 4 hours.
I'm going Lou Holtz. I'll pull out the book. It's on my bookshelf back here somewhere. But his autobiography.
Throw.
But you know, you talk about the experience. Vanderbilt has been there so many times. But the guys that will be in there tonight are not guys that played in the World Series 2 years ago, right? This is their first experience. And facing elimination for the first time in the postseason, it's going to be a big challenge, right? This is where Tim Corbin is going to have to really push the right buttons in terms of, you know, staying mentally tough. And he's going to have some pitchers tonight that haven't,
yeah, so
you know,
Stanford.
Haven't been proven as much.
Yeah, Stanford too.
Did you guys hear the bet that I'm a part of with the morning show with Robbie and Rex? I walked into this conversation and he decided, hey, I will jump in. But basically, Ryan and Robbie feel that if Vandy wins tonight, they would go to Leiter to start Saturday on short rest.
No.
Joe and I say no.
Saturday? They play Friday.
They have to play Friday.
Friday. Joe
so
and
you're
I,
saying they would go rocker on Friday. No. And then Leiter on Saturday?
Yes.
I don't think so.
Yes, that's what they're saying. Joe and I say no.
I don't believe they would.
So a pedicure is on the line. The loser has to go get a pedicure.
Has to go get a pedicure.
So Leiter pitched.
What's wrong with that? That's like, I think the winner should get like a free pedicure.
Well, yeah. Clearly, they must be against pedicures.
So yeah, they got something against pedicures?
And we're being very dude about this. I don't
That's
know.
A whole other discussion. We'll leave that aside.
I mean, there's.
But
a,
I don't
but
think.
This is a. You talking about having Willie cringing. I'm surprised he hasn't walked out of the room. We're talking about Vanderbilt winning tonight, Vanderbilt winning Friday, and then talking about a bet on Saturday. Like,
yeah,
this is like Willie wants. Willie's like, I don't even know what you guys are talking about. Friday. When is Friday? I don't even know. What is today?
One game at a time.
Today is Stanford. What? Friday. What is Friday? Saturday? Huh? I don't even know what you're talking about. So yeah, you're not going to get Coach Willie to weigh in on a possible Saturday second game against NC State bet. Like, good luck with that. I mean, you could have the bet be $1 million. He's not weighing in on Vanderbilt's third game from right now. That's not happening.
I'm pretty sure, just based on the track record, that with Leiter throwing 122 pitches on Monday night, he's not going to pitch. Unless
Monday?
They make the finals.
Monday?
He would,
yeah.
You don't think Monday to Saturday? No? Saturday night?
No. That's not what they've done before. That's not what they've done before. I think they'll go with, I'm guessing it'll be Riley tonight, and then it would be Christian Little on Friday.
Rocker on Saturday.
And then Rocker on Saturday on regular rest. And then if they were fortunate enough to make it, then start Leiter in game one. Of the final, if they could get there.
I think who's on the Leiter? Who said that? Robbie? I think I'm on Robbie's side.
Robbie and Ryan say Leiter would start Saturday. Joe and I say no.
I think so I'm with Robbie and
Darren,
Ryan.
You're saying they would go with rocker on Friday.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep.
On one less day than normal, yeah, and then lighter on Saturday, and that would be...
Their season's on the line. I mean, there is no tomorrow. There is no saving. This is it. You have to beat NC State twice. I mean, there is no Monday. There is no... I mean,
You go
with your horses. They got you here. I could be wrong. I'm not Corbs. I mean, I'm certainly not I'm not going to tell Tim what to do. Tim knows what's best, but yeah. I just think he goes rocker lighter.
I will say that I guess when I said they don't normally do that, I'm just saying they usually have those guys. They try to keep those guys on regular rest, especially after they have thrown 100-plus pitches, which both of them did, and lighter threw 122. And you're saying, he would have, in theory, just one less day of rest, and it's not like he's going on 2 days rest, right? He would have Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday,
I mean,
Friday.
When I talk about what Cops did, Cops pitched, three innings and then came out and started? Isn't that right? Isn't that what Cops did?
Oh, yeah, but
didn't
remember...
Didn't he do relief against NC State and then came out and pitched eight innings?
But Tim Corbin, I think, is very conscious of...
Oh, I agree with
the
that.
Scouts,
I'm not,
the
yes,
health,
of
the,
course.
The future of those guys. I think back in the 80s, it would have been a no-brainer.
Yeah,
like,
but 6 days.
Rocker could have been pitching tonight if that was the case.
These guys are preparing for their next level, which is the major leagues. They're going to be pitching on 5 days rest. We're talking about 6 days. I mean, I don't see.
Not six, four.
Rocker pitch, lighter pitch Monday. So
right,
Tuesday,
so if he
Wednesday,
were to come back
Thursday,
Saturday, that's
Friday.
4 days rest.
Okay. Yeah, you're right. My math. That was Kentucky math.
Which is just a little less. I mean, normally it would be 6 days rest. That's
now
their
you know
normal
why I didn't get
rotation,
into Vanderbilt.
Pretty much.
There you go. That's it. The fact I think they asked me that question.
So it's two
How
less
many
days
rest is that? And I was like,
and
six.
He threw 122. Yeah. I think they'll be careful with that. I think they already are kind of – people were a little surprised they ran him back out there for the eighth inning.
No, I didn't want to be laughed at. No.
Now – could he maybe come out? Let's say you're in Saturday's game.
We're just having a separate conversation.
It's okay.
We'll just keep talking.
you got my wheels turning. With
I did.
Game.
I did a visit.
I want
to
in on the pedicure.
No. We were having a Vanderbilt conversation. Go ahead. Sorry. Well, Chase asked if I applied. I was like, no, I didn't apply. I didn't want to embarrass waste anybody's time.
The gentleman from East Nashville has the floor.
Sorry.
Quiet on the set. Quiet. Everyone, quiet, please.
I think Leiter would probably try to get in there and maybe two or three innings in relief on Saturday.
No, the bet is
the
a
bet
start,
is start.
Right?
If he comes in on relief, that's fine, whatever. But the bet is start.
Well, if Rocker started on Friday, that would tell you something, right? Then we would have a clue. But I think I can't see Leiter going full tilt start another 120 something pitches on that day.
Well, Rocker pitched Saturday, right? He's going Friday.
Yeah, Rocker pitched Saturday.
Rocker
Leiter
pitched Saturday,
Monday. So even if
a little
Rocker...
bit different. Like if we were talking about Sunday, then that would be, I think, a little bit different conversation. But I don't know.
So you think they would go with Rocker on Friday, one less day?
Yes.
And then probably Little on Saturday with potential of going to lighter.
By the way, also just so you know, this NC State team, why I would pull out my guns, they've beat Kevin Copps and Jack Leiter. So, I'd throw my guns at them. I wouldn't mess around with NC State. They've got to prove they belong.
It's not a matter of messing around. You have to beat them twice. So, regardless, whether you need 18 innings in theory.
Well, you got to beat Stanford tonight.
That's the whole thing. You got to get the. So I'm curious, would they come in with Little tonight? And Riley has had a couple of games where he has blown up in the first inning and not gotten over the hump. So if he's got it, he should be good. But I wonder who would come in quick. It might be McIlvain rather, who's done it a couple of times.
Jim McIlvain.
Chris McIlvain. I don't know. I'm concerned about tonight. I don't know if they've even decided, but we talked about Leiter and Rocker as the competitors they are. They'll probably be lobbying to try to get in there some if they need it. It's a great question, though. Got my wheels turning.
All right, we will come back and bring in Joe Rexroad from Robbie and Rexroad. We'll talk about pedicures, Tennessee, Vanderbilt, and a lot more. We'll do that on the other side as you listen to Darren, Donick, and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Trying to think, Elijah is pretty good with themes. I'm missing this. Is this just random? I'll take random songs for 500, Alex, or is there something I'm missing?
This is me playing towards my audience here.
Yeah, Rexy likes Steely Dan, right?
Oh, okay. I gotcha.
The two biggest Steely Dan fans.
Oh yeah,
on
nothing
the station.
Nothing wrong with this song. I was usually you have a theme, and so I guess the theme is our next guest. All right, back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase, you learn something new every single day. I've been doing it for a long time, learning something new. Today I learned that Jack Leiter will be going on 4 days rest, not five or six. What was my answer? Six. Joe Rexroad, Robbie and Rexroad, can be heard weekdays 6 to 10 leading up to our show. He is on to talk about pedicures and a lot more. I didn't hear how this whole bet happened. Chase is just kind of – informed us on what you guys were discussing in your final hour.
Yeah, well, there's a long story that I will try to cut down. So we have a regular texter to the text line, Heidi, who introduced the idea of, I think it was just getting a pedicure with me. But then we got onto the topic of pedicures, and I personally not a huge fan. My wife and daughter are huge fans. Katie got me to go a few years ago, and I hated it. It hurt, and then it tickled, and then
really?
I was grossed out.
So you did experience it. It's not just a matter of principle of not doing that. You tried it. You experienced it.
Yeah, I tried it, and I just didn't like it. So anyway,
I kind of feel like my experience would be like Dumb and Dumber. Like I would be Jim Carrey. I'm pretty sure that's what I feel like my experience would be. Yeah.
You'd never do that, Darren, when we had the sponsor for a long time. I did it once because of that, and it wasn't that bad. Wasn't bad. I have not been back since, but it was enjoyable.
Well, that spa's not open anymore, so that's probably why you haven't been back.
Put it on the list of things.
Blue River Canyon.
Do you have any gift cards? Do you have any gift cards?
Blue River Canyon gift cards.
Got a lot of gift cards.
I do, Joe. Next time you see me, I'll give you a Blue River Canyon. You can get a pedicure or give it to your wife or daughter. There you go.
You could send it to Vingit, you know? I mean,
or Vingit. There we go.
There's a whole other story.
The mail.
But see, Joe had the line of the morning, though, because the loser of this bet goes and gets the pedicure with Heidi, and Joe then goes, and that's when we'll find out that that's actually Lou that lives in his basement.
I've been meaning to ask you. You guys reference Heidi a lot. What are the odds? Give us a percentage that Heidi is really a Heidi. Like, it feels like a burner account, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, as Chase said, it could be Jared. You know, I mean who knows? Huh. There's so many possibilities. This is actually an opportunity to draw Heidi out into the world. And, you know, we'll see.
If she's real?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Basically. And then, and hopefully, and so this got into the Jack Leiter, because I heard you guys last segment, and I agree with Willie. I mean, I just don't think Tim Corbin would trot him out on 4 days rest, two less than normal after 123 pitches. I think maybe a quick bullpen stint. But I do think Rocker, by the way, will pitch Friday if they win tonight. I mean, because a 6 days rest, that happens sometimes when you go weekend series to a Thursday, Friday, Saturday series. I mean, I think that would be pretty cool, pretty strong.
Pretty routine. Yeah. Now that I think about it, I think you're probably right on that one.
But Leiter, I really don't. So anyway, we got into the bet. And then Porth and Robbie have never had a pedicure, and neither of them are very enthused about it. So I just thought, you know, like the loser pedicure with Heidi could really be a nice. And like I said, like, you know, Porth is all worried about. And I'm like, there's a real good chance the game isn't played. Come on, you know.
Yeah.
Chase was trying to get him to shave his head, but we went pedicure.
Okay.
So it's a multifaceted thing.
This is a very, very touchy subject for Coach Lou Holtz. I mean, Coach Willie, who really does not want to talk about Saturday.
Looking past
at
it's
all.
very painful is, right now.
Yeah, we have zipped
this.
Right by Stanford, right by that first game against NC State, and right into that elimination game on Saturday.
Very uncomfortable.
Willie's cat took the whistle, so he can't find it.
I mean, you talk about some squirming. Whew. What did you make of the game yesterday? We talked a little bit about Tennessee and the reasons why, and everybody had kind of a good reason. You know, Chase talked about the stage. You know, Willie added perspective of some things that Tennessee went through, and I brought up the something that we actually saw it play out on the air, that they just had something very, very early in the game, an opportunity, a team that really feeds off their emotion. They had bases loaded and nobody out and got nothing. And I just said, I literally blurted it on the air, like, that's going to come back to bite them. It just felt like, man, that was an opportunity to really, for a team that loves to ride the emotions, right, and ride that wave, an opportunity to really dictate the pace, dictate the game. And, you know, credit Texas, but I just kind of felt like, yeah, it was still very, very early on, and I know Coach Willie will tell you, long ways to go, guys. But and sometimes you only get one crack, Joe. Sports is funny. You know, sometimes you get multiple cracks at beating a team. Sometimes you get one opportunity to run through that door, and maybe that was their one opportunity, and it proved that it was, because they're coming home.
Yeah, well, that was big, and then even later they fight back to make it 4-4, and you get the 5-2-3 double play.
Yes.
So I mean, you know, you had some really good plays by Texas, really good defense, and some good pitching. But I agree. I mean, those opportunities are tough, and I think when you talk about emotion, I mean, if you get the throwout, you know, at home, and you keep it to 5-4. Then you got a little bit of emotion off that. You got a little bit of momentum. You're fine. It's 5-4. There's going to be more runs in this game. But instead, you don't get it, and it's 6-4, and then you have another hit, and it's 7-4. And I just felt like Tennessee after that, I just didn't see the same. I just thought they had a lot of bad at-bats late in the game and just didn't have that same push or intensity. I think that took a lot out of them. And, you know, look, I do think that the replay showed that they should have turned it over, but they
didn't.
I thought
he was out. Did you agree?
Yeah,
you thought
he was out?
Yeah.
I thought he was out.
I think that we can talk about replay systems that we saw in a number of different sports last night for the entire show today. I think we wanted to. There is an upside, but there is a downside to the replay process. But I do think it's a – and, Joe, tell me what you think. The whole process of, hey, if it's close, we can't really tell 100% – then we'll stick with the call on the field. I thought that was in play, and that's been in play a lot in Omaha. They've replayed a lot of stuff. They don't have the best camera angles like they probably do in Major League Baseball, even though it's the World Series. And I think, really, if you were to zoom in and blow it up, you would tell that the guy never touched home plate because he stepped right on the foot of the catcher, right? But it's kind of like, well, it's a little grainy. I think that's what happened, but I'm not sure. So let's just stick with the call on the ice, which I sure wish was the case in the 2017 Stanley Cup Finals, because it was grainy. Yeah. Philip Forsberg's skate was grainy. Is there a shadow? Is it in the air? Is it not? How can you be sure? Oh no, they were sure, and Peter Laviolette blew a gasket. Like, but this is the philosophy, right, of replay. This is where there's still humans involved in trying to solve the replay. I just think it's a fascinating thing, but it all comes down to how clear does it have to be to overturn the call, because that's a huge call.
Yeah, and I think that's how they're. And look, I think in general, I would agree with that as a guide, which is, if it's blatant and everyone is just, I mean, boom, got it wrong, reverse it. If there's any question, you stick with the call. And I agree with that idea. The problem is sometimes that's not the guide, and then sometimes it takes 20 minutes to get to something that should be quick to figure out. I mean, there's a lot of problems with all of it. I think it was clear enough to overturn, but I think you're exactly right. A little bit, okay, where exactly is it touching him? Is dirt, you know, I mean, I don't think, like some Tennessee fans I've heard is just like, it's the most obvious call in the world. And if that's not overturned, you don't have replay. Well, there are easier runs. There are easier instances of replay review where it's like you have to overturn it. But to me, there was enough. And I do think that was big. But, you know, beyond that, like if you're a Tennessee fan or part of that program, and that's not really the story. And the story is you came up short. You didn't have your best. And I think some of the story of this team is that, look, there is still a talent gap between some of these teams in Omaha and Tennessee. And it's been a remarkable job by Tony Vitello, and they've been, you know, the sum better than the parts. They've been a team huge on intangibles and big moments. And I think especially with pitching depth and quality for that team, you know, they don't quite measure up. And I think some of that was – I think that's some of why they're also going home today for sure.
Willie and Chase know I brought this up several weeks ago, and really no one was talking about it then. Now a lot more people are talking about it today. In fact, I got a tweet during the first segment of the show from at Blake Barnett 2 says, "Hey, D-Mac, I think Tennessee is going to get Coach Tony Vitello back, and I don't think that is the last we see of the Vols in Omaha. I love this coaching staff and team. Great season and great things to come for the Bass Vols." I brought up weeks ago, don't be surprised if LSU is not – this is well before the Super Regional. LSU isn't looking at Tony Vitello because it was about the same time frame when LSU reached out to Tim Corbin when he was at Vanderbilt. I mean, it was, I think, year four. We went back and looked at it. Don't be surprised if Tony Vitello, but nobody was talking about it then. Now people are talking about it. He was even asked about it after the game yesterday. Where do you think this is going? Do you think that Tennessee's going to be able to pay? We know they'll pay, but can they meet all the, you know, can they do all the upgrades and everything that they need to do? Because LSU can do all that. It's already there. It's just turnkey? Is that what they say about, you know, certain houses, right? You just turn the key and you don't need to do anything. Like everything has been it's furnished, everything is ready, just walk right in and there's your home. That's LSU. Tennessee needs to do, you know, they need to fix the house up. So where do you think this is going?
Yeah, well, first of all, I agree, and I think LSU, I think it just looks to me pretty obvious that you talk about a process that's been a month now that you know, that they're going to look at him, and they should look at him. I mean, how if you're in charge of that search and you're all over the country talking to different coaches like this, how would you not include him on your list and have higher on your list? So I think that's going to happen. I think if I were Tony Vitello, I'd absolutely enjoy sitting down and hearing everything they have to say and enjoy getting an offer and what that might mean, because I do think Tennessee is prepared to do what it can to keep him. And I think that's a lot. Look, he's going to get paid a lot more. I mean, $580,000. In fact, I know Jason Swain on Twitter today said it sort of stole them that they were going to try to make him the highest paid coach in the country. That's about
$1.5 million, right?
Well, I mean, the last, Adam Sparks, the last tax form-based story he did on Tim Corbin was more than $2 million.
More than $2 million. Okay.
You know, so you're talking about a huge, but again, I think it's more than that. I think it's salary pool and I think it's facilities for sure. Like you said, Darren, turnkey. And that's arguably the best program in the country in terms of all things that you need to be successful, which has to be appealing. But I think that, and this is really, it's just me speculating, but I really think Tony Vitello likes where he is and likes he has an opportunity to build the house, he's already started and from not much. And now if you add all those elements, I think he's got a chance to have a really powerful program and his own program, not come in and, at LSU, like Paul Maneri, it's like, gosh, yeah, he's good, but, man, only one national title? And it's a little bit different that way, too. Whereas, I think at Tennessee, now, granted, you can change expectations if you keep having success over time, but I think it's probably a little bit more reasonable in that way too. But I think we're going to see discussions and back and forth. I think LSU would be crazy not to go after him, and then it'd be interesting with him. But I think if Tennessee gives him what he wants, and that's certainly a lot of that is Lindsey Nelson Stadium, and you know, trying to bring that up to speed with the rest of the league, I'd be surprised if he bolted for LSU.
Joe Rexrode is with us, The Athletic, and of course Robbie and Rexrode in the morning here on 102.5 The Game. Joe, I want to ask you another one about Vitello. He's a fairly young coach. You hit on it, and I agree with you. They got into this real emotional frenzy in the middle of the game. And if you watch them throughout the year, they do this from time to time, and they've kind of thrived on it, right? It's worked for them to a large degree, but he's not afraid to go out there and stir it up. And I think he does it intentionally to get his bench going, get life through the bench, and that can work well. And sometimes in baseball, it doesn't work well, right? Where, you know, if you're just relying on emotion to get you through it, you know, it can go either way. And there was the situation where he kind of riled up the umpires, and Ben McDonald pointed this out. You know, maybe they should not have had the antenna up, the rabbit ears, as we used to call it in the dugout all the time, but these guys are human, and they did. And it ends up, I think, looking poorly on Tennessee. But what do you think of that? Like, if you were advising him as maybe an elder coach or something, would you tell him, hey, you might need to take it down a notch? I know this is your thing. You want to be yourself, but there are some times where maybe I think it's counterproductive.
Yeah, that's a good point. And maybe that's, you know, I mean, when you talk about stage with this team, you know, maybe there's an example. It's just the emotion already in that place is so amped up, right? It's already so turned up for everybody that maybe, and I think it did seem to me like Tennessee, as soon as that became a 7-4 game, like a huge deflation of
that
team.
And they couldn't rev it back up.
Yeah, and they didn't get it back. So I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, I still would say when you look at the overall trajectory and success, man, it's hard to tell someone to not be themselves, you know? So I guess I would lean that way. But, I mean, this kind of reminds me of something that Tim Corbin told us not long ago in one of his pressers about the loss to Michigan in 07 and another coach basically telling him, like, yeah, you guys were too tight, you know, like he could see it coming from that team. So there probably is a little bit of a growing into the job and kind of being able to know when to throttle up and down a little bit that you get with seasoning as a coach. I mean, I think that's a good point. I would say in general, though, it's probably going to be the identity of that team and program, right? And
there's no doubt that's happening. There's a couple that he got thrown out of a game against Vanderbilt on a play where it wasn't worth arguing. It wasn't a bad call. Like, I don't understand what the umpire is supposed to do. He's getting an earful on a play that was not worth arguing over. And the same thing happened yesterday. He's arguing a catcher's interference, and it was not a bad call at all. Then they get riled up on a ball four, which was a ball. And as we've known, if we watch all these games, the strike zone, it's tough, right? The home plate umpires are having trouble there. They're not as good as major league umpires, and these pitchers are awfully good. There's borderline pitches. But the ball four that puts runners at first and second, it's a ball. And the guy loses his mind, his assistant coach, right? But this is after Vitello has already gone out there and riled up the umps. And he throws the binder and stuff. If I'm the athletic director, I might have to have a little talk and say, guys, I love the emotion. Let's keep channeling that the right way. That's our thing. But we got to dial it back a little bit. That's not a good look.
Well, you have that talk after he signs his name on the new deal. But, yeah.
That's a good point. Good point. Yeah, get him locked up first.
That's right. No, I mean, I think that's a fair point. And you know, it's sometimes coaches do these things. I think you see this in basketball a fair amount, right? It's like, you know what? I'm getting another tech and just getting thrown out of here and try, or whatever. Just a tech.
Well, that's why I think he was doing it. He was trying to get a tech, basically, and get his bench going to where they would play at a different level.
Yeah, and they were already, I think, emotional. It's just you get through those ups and downs of the game. Yeah, there's something to be said for being able to control it, I suppose.
We're talking to Joe Rexrode, one half of Robbie and Rexrode Morning, 6 to 10 on ESPN 102.5 The Game, also from The Athletic. And we started this talking about Vanderbilt with their elimination game tonight against Stanford. And you know, you saw in Tim Corbin's post-game press conference, they lost 1-0 against NC State, but you know, there was some frustration. He said they couldn't get base runners. And do you feel like that this team has reached that full potential like we think we can see yet, or is there another level that obviously they're going to have to go to tonight if they want to stay alive?
Well, I think I think I heard you guys talking about this the other day. You know, I think this is certainly going to be a big test of other guys, because look, I mean, you can, if Vanderbilt gets to Friday and just pushes two more runs across the other night with an incredible lineup performance, now you have one game to win. You get to rest till Friday, and you can go through a lot of this whole thing just really leaning on those two big guns. And well, that's gone now. So, you're talking, first of all, obviously, offensively, I mean, it's been an up-and-down team. I mean, certainly Tim Corbin has had better lineups. 2 years ago, that was a better offensive team without question. But also, there's still a lot of potential. A lot of guys have delivered. You think about that Georgia Tech game, you know, the wild one. I mean, I think we're going to see, right, they're going to have to win at least another game or two like that, you know, to have a chance here at the end. But then just the pitching depth. I mean, I just think you're going to have probably someone beyond, well, first of all, obviously Riley and Little, I think, are going to be the two freshmen, are going to be factors. They're going to have to be, but also maybe even beyond. I mean, McIlvain, Maldonado, Murphy, those guys have been reliable. They've been very good in this tournament, but you're going to have to go deeper than that too, I think, at some point, and get some clutch innings to be able to pull this off. So I think Corbin said it after the game, and you know, a lot of Vanderbilt fans may not have thought it was good, but he said it's good. You know, more guys are going to have to come in here. And look, we know there's a ton of talent on this team. We know it's young, and in some cases, I mean, Christian Little is a really good pitcher. He has not had to pitch a pitch in the postseason. That's circumstance more than anything. But now, hey, he's going to have his chance either tonight or I think Saturday or sometime, right? So this is going to be a great look at this team. Can it grow up in time with some of those guys, and can it get the collective excellence it's going to need three times between now and late Saturday night just to get to the final series?
Joe, before we let you go, I want to sneak in a Titans question, because I read the piece that the Athletic staff did on MVPs for all 32 teams, and you wrote the blurb on the Titans selecting Ryan Tannehill. I could not agree with you more, even though the easy answer may be Derrick Henry because of what he's done. But with all the weapons that Tannehill now has, I think that he almost has to be. He has to be the MVP because he's got to make it all work. But that also, in turn, puts even more pressure on him. So why did you come to that conclusion?
Well, I mean, I think the easy answer is Derrick Henry, and I think he has been their MVP, and he certainly could be again. And as I wrote, the Titans would love for this answer to be like a Bud Dupree, right? Someone on that side who had such a monster year. And the offense is, I think, so loaded, you could certainly see it being spread around and maybe hard to pick one. But I think, honestly, it's more just because Tannehill has such an opportunity now, and I think he'll take advantage of it. I just think that they're going to be a little bit more pass-reliant with the way they're set up. And in the name of, you know, a little bit of longevity and even just having Derrick Henry fresh in January, I just think the numbers are going to go down some for him. And when you have those two guys on the outside, Tannehill, he's been so good at spreading the ball around, just hitting the open guy, just playing point guard. And I think he's going to do that at a high level and take advantage of it and have really good numbers, really efficient numbers. Maybe not going to have like Patrick Mahomes numbers or Aaron Rodgers numbers, but really good numbers, and I think that's why he was my pick. Now, I also would say that could all happen, and you could poll writers or players or whoever around the league, and they probably still wouldn't give it to him. Like, the majority still wouldn't, because there's still just this, I think, really overwhelming perception that he's a passenger here, you know, and just a guy who benefits from stacked boxes against Derrick Henry all day. So But I think for people who watch him closely, you know, I think he's more than that. And I think he's just in a good position right now to really take advantage.
Well, Joe, appreciate the time as always. And we're going to win our bet. I feel good about it. But we will do it again soon and be listening tomorrow starting at 6.
Sounds good. Thanks, guys. And, yeah, looking forward to that pedicure with Lou. Should be fun.
Joe Rexroad, one half of Robbie and Rexroad, morning 6 to 10 here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Also writes for The Athletic. We'll have much more coming. But first, I have to tell you about bets, because I do this every day and it makes me very happy to do so, because summer's here and sports betting action is heating up at BetMGM. Ready to feel some playoff excitement in hockey and basketball? Just sign up with BetMGM using the code 1025GAME and your first wager is totally risk-free, up to $600. When you register with BetMGM, you also get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, player props, and daily boosted odds specials to your favorite sports. Whether you're a fan of MLS or MLB, you can make every goal and home run mean so much more with the king of sportsbooks. Simply download the BetMGM app today or go to BetMGM.com. Use that code 1025GAME to get back up to $600 on your very first wager. New customer offer, paid in free bets. You must be 21 years or older, must be in Tennessee. Visit BetMGM.com for a full list of terms and conditions. For problem gambling support, call the Tennessee Red Line at 800-889-9789. Well,
I did it. Uh-huh. I did it. Yep, I did it. did a lot of talking that nobody heard.
Well, we saw it.
Well,
we saw it on the stream. I was like, yeah, he's muted.
Take two. Action. Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. Don't forget, 94.9 is the official English radio home of the Nashville Soccer Club. Listen in tonight as Nashville SC returns to Nissan Stadium to face Toronto. Pregame starts at 7:15. p.m. The match begins at 7:30. I think the second go around, Elijah was even better.
Good. It's like a practice practice try.
Yeah.
Instead of icing the kicker, it's icing the Darren.
Yeah. There we go. Adam Vingan. Hello, Mr. Vingan. We will talk to him to begin the second hour. We talked a lot of Preds yesterday. He heard that discussion and would like to weigh in. So we're going to have him weigh in coming up in the
nice
next hour.
He's intrigued by our discussion. He's inspired.
Yeah.
I had another one of those conversations last week when he was on vacation. He called me. He goes, I heard your discussion.
Yeah, he listens.
I like it.
I don't know if he's just
listening
for his
he
gift card.
He sparks discussion on our end. So this is
he
good.
Does.
We put great minds together.
Well, and he's put a survey, and he's done this a few times on The Athletic,
yes.
Where he's put a survey. He's asked different questions for
it's
fans.
It's a good survey.
Yeah, it is. So
he's got a lot of response to the survey, it looks like.
Yeah. So I think it'll be good to have that discussion with him. And, you know, I liked our discussion yesterday because I thought it was open and honest. And
we would call that a deep dive.
A deep dive,
for
sure.
We did a deep dive into the roster yesterday. I'm sure some people that are not on that level were like, man, you guys are deep in the weeds. But this is what it is. This is what it is for this team.
You know what
you do this time of year.
You know what, though, that I've kind of noticed about this fan base? You know, they like the deep dive. I mean, because they do
the hardcore fans, no question. They're doing deep dives on their own. They got their own stuff going.
This should happen, and this should happen, and this should happen. And, you know, I felt pretty good about the things I threw out there. Now, whether they actually happen or not, we'll see. But I think they're realistic. That if you can get Seattle to take Duchesne, trading Arvidsson, you know, just trying to get max value for what's available to try and put this thing back on track.
But so we'll get to that. I want to ask you guys one more thing on Vitello as you sort of close the chapter. Darren, okay, LSU is sitting out there. They have not filled their job, right? Which definitely has people saying, is there somebody that's still coaching that they would like to talk to? Right? It stands to reason. But is it possible that they would like to make the phone call to Corbin as well? They did.
I've heard that. I don't. I mean,
are you buying into that theory or no? There's some people from the outside that just assume that that's that. Remember, Mississippi State was convinced in 2018 that Corbin was coming there. It was on all their message boards. Hey, it's going to be great. We're going to get this guy. Which
well,
obviously didn't happen.
I've heard that. I think any school that wants to win, and any school that wants to be good at baseball, any school that's doing their due diligence, any school that's being responsible as an AD, of course you should reach out. I mean, all you can get told is no, thank you. I mean, if that's okay, so what? I mean, that you are where you started from. If you don't ask, it's going to be no anyway. So, I mean, you're at the same place, so you haven't lost anything. Of course, I think they should reach out. I don't buy for a minute. Look, if Tim Corbin was going to leave, Tim Corbin would have already left.
Well, I 100% agree with you.
He's not going anywhere.
Don't get me wrong. I don't think he is going there.
I think
he, in the past, he's always sort of taken the phone call to whoever.
Well, I don't
And
blame
I think
him.
There are those out there that still have the stigma attached to Vanderbilt. Oh, he's at Vanderbilt.
Well, he should always take the phone call.
Why would you want to come here?
Tim
Corbin, so much easier to win here.
Anybody who's in that situation should always, if we were in that situation, you always take the phone call. Because, look, that is your opportunity to get things that you need and want. That sometimes it takes that. I don't envy coaches for playing that game.
Right.
I don't.
And here's one
when you
other
have
thing.
The leverage, use it.
Here's one other thing that I think is interesting, though. This will be the first time, if it happens, and I think it very well could happen, where they make the call. When Paul Mainieri was hired, they definitely talked to Corbin. So this is the first coaching search that LSU has had since then. You now have Chancellor Diermeier. The more that I see of Chancellor Diermeier, the more I'm convinced this guy is the right guy. He's got a lot more Gordon Gee in him. He is there. He's at the games. He's engaged. He's asking the right questions. Everybody that I've talked to behind the scenes and from the outside, I think he has a great look, great image on the outside. So far, he's made a great impression. He says all the right things. He's there. But I think more importantly, behind the scenes, the people that have been dying for some help in that building are feeling like they're getting a response. They're getting listened to by him. I think that's a big factor here.
It just feels
different. We're wasting time talking about, like, he's not going anywhere. I don't know why we're talking about Vanderbilt and Tim Corbin. And to me, the question is, can Tennessee keep Tony Vitello?
But would you
do everything it took to keep him? What would you do if you're Tennessee? I mean, we know his importance right now, but are you willing to literally just give him whatever he wants, a blank check, and just promise him the moon?
So you don't.
Isn't that what Vanderbilt did with Corbin?
Are you that sure that LSU is going after him, though?
Is that what Vanderbilt did with Corbin? I don't know. I mean,
Vanderbilt responded to his request.
They did, but I mean, to that level.
Oh yeah.
Really?
I mean,
relative to what they normally did for coaches, I think they stepped up big time. Gordon
Gee still had to go raise his own money
over
the years. Tony Vitello's not going to have to worry about doing that if he stays. They're going to be like, hey, dude, tell us what you want. What do you want?
You don't think that there was, you know, you see the facility they have behind the left field wall and everything they have underneath.
Of course,
the football stadium.
Sure.
He got a ton of stuff.
He did.
And he got it because he leveraged those things. It's been a
stair-step thing. But it has. He's had to prove it the whole time, though, and he keeps getting it, and that's fine. But Tony Vitello is going, I've already proven to you, so either you're going to pony up everything now or I go to LSU.
Are you sure that the LSU is going
no.
after him, though?
That's
no. the thing.
But why wouldn't they? I mean, why would they not?
Well, there's a lot of coaches out there. I don't know.
Yeah,
I
mean,
you may be dead on right. I don't know.
I think they want somebody that's –
Well,
that's
remember, too, Mike Bianco from – Ole Miss, he played at LSU, right? He's been at Ole Miss forever. He would be a logical guy. His son plays for LSU. Mm-hmm. But apparently he doesn't want the job. So I just, there's a lot of great coaches out there. That's all I'm saying. And Vitello has only been there for 4 years. He's a great up-and-coming guy. I just think that LSU thinks that they can get anybody, right? They're one of those guys, one of those players. Like, we have everything. We want the very, very best. We're not, quote-unquote, necessarily going for the up-and-comer.
They can't get everybody because they've tried. And they didn't get Tim Corbin, so they can't get everybody.
And they don't often change coaches. They've had, like, two coaches in 50 years.
And by the way, how do you think that did?
45 years, whatever
it is. How do you think that handled their ego? They went after a Vanderbilt coach in year four and got turned down.
Well, if you hear them
talk
like, about
we're LSU.
Well, if you hear their thing, it's like, well, you know, we looked at him, but we like Mineri better.
Yeah, right. Sure.
Okay. I believe that.
Okay. All right, we'll come back. We'll switch gears. We'll bring in Adam Vinken to start the second hour of Darren Dunnick and Chase. That is next.